Welcome back to Occasional Randomness. I'm your host, Eric Scott, and joining me, as always, my fellow co-host, someone who loves a good math equation, Jason Johnson.
Yeah, so we're going to have to get this episode going because I'm running out of both Sharpies and room on my arm to write because these notes are just getting out of hand.
Yeah, you have to go like, to your feet and legs and you run out of room.
Yeah. So transcribing these later is going to be a pain, I can tell you that.
Yep, you got to get in the right order and you don't know if it's up or down. But more on that later.
We'll get there.
So this is the big 2-0, our 20th episode.
Oh, I'd have brought a cake.
Yeah, right. Happy birthday. No. But we did kind of call an audible midway through the week, and there'll just be another single episode review this time. But next time, we promise that we will get into some more things. It's the final season of Star Wars The Bad Batch. I premiered a couple days ago. Season 3 of that.
Yeah, you may hear a faint echo of promises we didn't keep.
Hey.
It's worth it.
Yeah. And speaking of 3s and Season 3 of Farscape is almost over. And this time around, I know, but we still got more to go. And this time around, the penultimate episode of the season, episode 21, Into the Lion's Den, Part 2, Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. And as always, our public service announcement, if you like what we do here, please give us a like or review wherever you listen to this at, or help spread the word on social media and let other people know about this fine podcast. We would appreciate it. All right, so let's jump on into it. As we said before, the penultimate episode of Season 3, Episode 21, Into the Lion's Den, Part 2, Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. And as you probably expect from a Part 2, it picks up right where Part 1 left off, which is kind of good, because otherwise it'd be kind of weird and you wouldn't know what's going on. And we pick up just after Scorpius threatens to go to Earth and destroy it. He tells Crichton that he doesn't really care about Earth or his species, only that they matter to Crichton. He says that he's out of time, the Commandant, Graeza, may return at any time, and he must give her results or she will scrap his research and the Scarrans will take over half the galaxy. So, you know, no pressure or anything. John just tells Scorpius that he's screwed, but Scorpius reminds him that if he is screwed, then things around here will get very, very ugly. Later, John, Aaron, and Krace are in the officer's lounge, and Aaron says that they've already succeeded as Graeza is due back soon with the authorization to shut down the wormhole project. But John says that's not good enough. Scorpius will not just sit back and let his baby die. In the restorative chamber, Jewel, Dargo, and Rigel, and Chiana agree that they won't stay any longer. They'll leave. But the others enter, and John tells them that Grace's arrival changes everything. He says that he's run out of time to destroy the research from the inside, so that means there's only one option left. Destroy the command carrier. John tells them that all of Scorpius's data is on the ship, and basically this ship is the Peacekeeper Wormhole Project. Rigel says, that's nice, but this ship's over a metro long, prompting Chiana to ask if that can even be done. John says he doesn't really care how, but Aaron reminds him that there are over 50,000 men, women, and children on board, but John says that they'll just have to find a way to get them off. Dargo objects, although John reminds him that this is what they came here to do. He asks Krace if he knows if there's a way to do this, and Krace replies he'll need to see the specs on the modifications to the carrier since he left. John says, yes, they can do this, and they have to try anyway. Rigel says that he's seen how powerful the wormhole weapons are and what horrible destruction they can cause. No one should wield such power. So, Rigel, a voice of reason.
Who'd have thought?
Right. Back in John's head, John and Harvey are talking, and John asks if Scorpius really would attack Earth. Harvey says that he wouldn't put it past Scorpius to travel for 60 cycles to destroy an insignificant planet simply for revenge, and then asks if he's gained the ability to return home, would he really destroy that information? Strappa, back in the real world, snaps John out of it, and John is absentmindedly writing wormhole equations all over his hands, which is unlocking more and more secrets. As Strappa leaves to enter in the new data, John realizes that he is accessing the wormhole knowledge through his subconscious, and he could succeed in controlling them if he wants. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Lorel tells Krace that he must get aboard Talon, but Krace replies that Talon is dead unless he has something to trade. We cut to Bracca entering Scorpius' command room, bringing the aforementioned Krace under armed escort. Krace says he has a demand, prompting Scorpius to send him away. Like, nope, not go away. As he's being dragged out, Krace says that he demands he suffers no repercussions for his actions during his exile, that the Leviathan hybrid be resurrected, and he would be the leader of that project alongside Lieutenant Lorel.
Aw.
Yeah. Scorpius stops it from being kicked out of the room, assuming Krace has something comparable to offer. And Krace responds that he has more than that. Scorpius says that once Commandant Graeza returns, any agreement they make may not be honored, But Kray says that an executive order signed now, no matter what happens to Scorpius later, will stand. Scorpius accepts his terms and has Kray released. Kray tells Scorpius that John has no intention of helping him. He is conspiring with some of Moya's crew to destroy the carrier. Double-crossing traitor?
Yeah, really?
Or
surprise?
Not. Right, yeah. Meanwhile, Erin enters the Peacekeeper training ground, finding an injured girl. She takes a look and cleans up her little wound on her hand, but Henta comes along and hits the wound, saying to let it bleed and scar, as she'll want it later, and sends her away. She tells Erin not to make her soft, but Erin says that there is so much she doesn't know. Kreis comes along and tells Erin that there's a problem, and to follow him. Meanwhile, Dargo, Rigel, Tiana, and Jewel have secured their information on the carrier for John, but get stopped by security. Back in the research lab, John is still working, as Travis says that the equations are flowing from him. Scorpius enters and says that it seems John's subconscious has blossomed despite himself, and then he tells John that the plot against his ship has failed, his friends are in custody. Kreis is brought in, and John leaps on him, assuming, I guess, that that's why it's failed. John's restrained, but screams that Kreis is dead. Scorpius says that if Kreisa insists his friends stay imprisoned, then so be it. John tries to plead with him and says it was all him, and demands his friends to be freed, or he won't help any further. But Scorpius tells him that he's in no position to make any more demands, cooperate, or he'll kill everybody.
Saw that one coming.
Yeah. Surprise. And we cut to Dargo, Rigel, Jewel, and Chiana in a cell, where Dargo says he was a prisoner here for 8 cycles before. Rigel says that the last time he was here, it took him 130 cycles to escape from the Peacekeepers. He was lucky. Outside of the jail there, John goes to the generator room to meet with Erin, but Kreis is there too. John's about ready to tear him apart, but Erin holds him back, telling him that he needs to listen. Kreis says that the ship can't be destroyed by throwing switches. He needs the distraction so that Scorpius would believe that the plot had failed. He kept Erin safe because he needs her to help with him. He says everything he has ever cared for is gone. His parents were taken away. His brother's dead. So now he does and lives only for his own interests. However, despite that, he understands the power of this technology and the horror that will come over the galaxy if anybody wields it. But he also knows that he's the only person capable of stopping it. John goes to leave, but Erin says that they're all on the same page here. They all want the ship destroyed. And Kreis tells John that the only way to do that is with Talon. Erin says that Kreis proposes that he and Talon starburst while still inside the command carrier's hangar, and doing that in an enclosed space will cause a massive explosion, causing the hangar to collapse upon itself. And then it will take at least another half of an arn for the rest of the Hulk carrier to fully implode, giving the crew time to escape. John asks Erin to tell him that she believes Kreis, so she asks if he has another way to destroy the ship, and Kreis admits, no, not really, he hasn't. And then he asks Kreis where they meet with him and Talon. Kreis tells him that nope, they won't. Starburst in a confined space will destroy Talon as well as himself, but he notes that it will be the hero's death the young Leviathan deserves. However, he tells Crichton that he will need a significant distraction to occupy Scorpius' time and attention, and John says he'll get him one. On that note, John returns to the experiment room and tells Strappa that they're going on a trip to get his module. Meanwhile, Lorella meets Kreis in the corridor and asks what's happening. She tells him that she knows something's wrong, and if she suspects he's conspiring against Scorpius, she must report it. Kreis says that, yep, she must, and tells her not to be disloyal to Scorpius in any way. And in front of everybody in the hallway, he hits her, knocking her to the floor, and tells her to tell Scorpius it won't work. Next time he sends a spy, send someone he actually cares about. Ooh, burn. On Moya, Strappa tells John to hurry, and in Pilot's den, John has told Pilot and Moya what Kreis is planning. Pilot tells John that Moya understands, at least the violent death Talon was destined for this way will be a more noble one. Pilot asks if he'll see John again, and John tells him to be ready to starburst away if he doesn't see him or them, and to give Moya his love. Pilot forwards her love to him as well as his own. Oh. Back on the panic carrier, Erin is walking around the corridors with a rope as John is preparing his module for flight. Scorpius asks why he got the module, and John says that he has a theory as to why his primitive little ship with no shields has survived wormholes. Scorpius calls for the first pilot who is ready to fly it, but Crichton says no, 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 they may screw things up. He admits that he could die on this trip, but that the Commandant will execute them on the return anyway. He challenges Scorpius, who will die anyway due to the bracelet if anything goes wrong with John, and Scorpius accompanies him to finally experience wormholes up close. And we cut
to... It's a buddy comedy.
Yeah. It's a buddy cop show. Wait, no. And we cut to John and Scorpius in the module, entering a nearby wormhole. Scorpius tells John that the experience is without description. They approach a zone of instability inside the wormhole, as the entire command carrier is listening to them over their comms, distracted. Hey, there we go. Kreis tries to get aboard Talon, but is stopped by an officer and says Scorpius's orders are that if Kreis tried to board Talon again, he will shoot to kill. Strabo announces that all their readings are in the danger zone, while Kreis throws a small grenade to distract the peacekeepers guarding Talon. And Aaron swings down from the ceiling, and they take the peacekeepers out. John tells Scorpius that flying wormholes takes finesse and manages to stabilize the ship. Scorpius says that he's never felt this connected, and Strabo tells them that they should return to the carrier anyway. Kreis bores Talon and tells him not to be afraid. He says that his weapons were all confiscated by the peacekeepers, and Moya will be enslaved unless they do something radical together. John and Scorpius return to the ship when Kreis' voice booms over the shipwide comm. He tells Scorpius he's making his final goodbyes, that he's standing in Scorpius' heart, about to squeeze hard. Scorpius is furious and tells Bracket to locate and stop him immediately. Kreis tells Scorpius that he is the most repellent of creatures. He wasn't born into the Peacekeepers or conscripted against his will and taken from his home, but actively chose to be one. Scorpius orders to scramble all prowlers, but Bracket tells him they're not planning to escape. Kreis says that the last time he left his ship, Scorpius forced him out and stole his life from him. This time he's not leaving quietly. Scorpius again calls to get the traitor off the ship, but as the carrier starts to shake, John tells him to hang on to something. Scorpius is shocked at realizing that Crichton and Kreis were working together all along. At Kreis' order, Talon starbursts and is destroyed in a massive explosion, sending energy rippling through the carrier. And as you might expect, people in a panic are running through the corridor screaming, as Darko says to the others, he's done it, it's going down. Escape pods, prowlers, marauders, everything starts fleeing the Doom Carrier. Dargo and the others shout to be released as their cell begins to fall apart. Aaron clears the training ground as Scorpius leaves the experiment room. The next room he enters becomes flooded with water, but Scorpius continues to walk through it, only stopping for a moment to watch his ship fall. John tries to get an outraged Strabo to leave, saying that the wormhole technology would not be a scientific achievement as he sees it, but a weapon with the potential to kill millions, and he can't let the peacekeepers have it. Strabo lets John know that he too holds significant information about the wormholes, and Scorpius will find him and force him to tell him what he knows. So they go to the Aurora chair, flashback to that, to wipe his memories, where John tells him that he's been very brave. Aaron arrives at the cell, where it collapses the bars inward, allowing everybody to escape. Scorpius returns to his command room and calms the ship to begin Priority 1 escape procedures. They're already way ahead of you, dude. And tells Rocket to go with him. Aaron calms John to tell him the others are okay, and John says don't wait, he's going to his module, and they'll meet back on Moya. John finishes erasing the knowledge from Strappa's mind as Dargo calls Pilot to patch him through to his ship. He voice activates it for rescue retrieval. As Aaron's trying to leave, she's met by Henta in a corridor, where Henta blames Aaron for costing some people their lives. Aaron replies that she knows she's saving millions, but Henta says she can't save herself and points a gun at her. Just then, an explosion hits her, and Aaron is forced to watch her former friend die a painful death. Pilot tells Dargo they must escape before the implosion or Moya will be destroyed. John reaches his module, but is met there by Scorpius. John says it looks like their partnership is over. No kidding. Scorpius says that John's name will be remembered by millions, as because of him, the Skarrans will soon destroy them all. John replies that one evil at a time is the best he can do. John asks if he'll still go after Earth, but Scorpius replies that the only vengeance he ever cared about is now no longer within his grasp. They tell each other the codes to remove their eye-inch bracelets. John says we were close, and throws the bracelet down. He says that if they're going to get off this boat, now would be a very good time. Scorpius tells him that he may not be getting off, and sadly says goodbye, and starts walking away. John calls after him, but he leaves. Aaron calms that the others are away, and she's leaving in a prowler now. John tells her to fly safe. And finally, back on Moya, Dargo says that he knew they'd ultimately leave each other, but didn't know it'd be this long. And Roger replies that he won't miss anybody, and then adds, maybe a little. Chiana tells Dargo that she'll probably try to find the Nabari resistance. Jules with Pilot, who asks whether or not she'll be leaving if they find her people. She starts to cry and says that from what she can tell, she won't be the only other one leaving Moya soon, which saddens Pilot. And on command, John is seated, still writing equations on his body, next to a sad and silent Aaron as they think about Kreis and Talon's sacrifice. The end. Some trivia about this episode. The scene where Scorpius walks up the stairs as the lake flows down the steps had to be done in one take, and many of the production personnel came to watch. Wayne Pygram revealed that just before the water cascaded down those steps, he realized that his boot tread was very thin than he would have preferred. Well, either way, you're getting wet, dudes. I don't know. Many of the sets built for Talon were redressed for this episode, giving the command carrier a grand scale that would have been unaffordable otherwise. I guess just for fun, Claudia Black and the crew placed bets on which direction the statue in the park would fall when it went down. Rowan Woods, the director, considered the episode to be an homage to the war films of the 50s and 60s, including Tora, 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 and the Battle of Britain. I guess the panic scene of people running around. I don't know, but... And Aaron acquires a new prowler in this episode, replacing the one that was destroyed way back in Die Me Dichotomy, which was what, the season finale of season two, right?
Have we only been one season without a prowler? Seems like longer, but I guess not. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, this has been 21 episodes ago, I guess, yeah, at this point. So, it just seems like forever, but that's TV shows back in those days.
Yeah, which is, you know, side note, that's kind of funny because we were talking about how many episodes some other shows have now, and it's like 10? Oh, okay.
Yeah, 10's the outside. Like, that's, oh, that's a lot, 10. Yeah, now, back in the day, it was like 26, 22, you know. Anyway, so that was the big, exciting conclusion to our two-parter here. So what do you think, Jason? Did they once again bring home a multi-part story? I can pretty much know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Yeah, a little slightly predictable, but I'll say, yeah, they definitely lived up to it. But I got to be honest, I feel like this was one of the more somber episodes we've dealt with in a while. I mean, at least that's my take at this point. Maybe, you know, I'm not remembering the others as clearly because, like we said, we've been through a lot of episodes. But, man, that ending, that was some of the most down stuff we've had, you know, somber, thoughtful stuff we've had at the end of an episode in a long time. So I know we've got one more to go before the end of the season, so it wasn't like the cliffhanger, but it almost could have been, you know?
Yeah, so I was trying to think back to the other two-parters and, like, well, the one three-parter, the Look at the Princess, I mean, that was kind of an upbeat. I mean, it had still depressing points here and there, but, you know, and it was more like familicide, like with the brother and sister at each other's throats and killing each other and stuff, versus here where it's like the crew taking a loss. But that was like more happy and upbeat with like weddings and people are happy and whatever. And yeah, this one, yeah, it's a little dark and depressing, but then again, that's also Farscape. So
yeah, we just usually don't come out of these multi-parters with the resolution being such a downer, I guess. Yeah, maybe Aaron's death previously would be the last one I'm trying to think of. But I don't remember if that was a multi-parter, but
yeah, it was more like a cliffhanger, like which we might. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it was an important but dark, I guess, two-parter, yeah. All right, so let's kind of go through some stuff here. So, yeah, I guess their first three plans aren't going to work that they talked about last episode, like sabotage the research, send it the wrong way, or just run away and let them finish. So John's got a cunning fourth plan. Just blow everything up. Oh, and by the way, don't kill all 50,000 people on the ship, you know, because, you know, there's kids and stuff. So, yeah, no problem. Easy peasy.
Right. I mean, it's the last part that makes it tricky. I mean, I'm sure there's tons of ways to destroy a ship or, you know, now what makes it difficult is getting yourself out of there. That's hard enough, right? You know, pulling something like that off and escaping, but to do it with that many men, women, and kids aboard, as you said, that's a lot of people to get off a ship.
Yeah. Cause before that, they had like the whole bank heist where they were, you know, robbing that, Shadow repository, and yeah, all they had to worry about was just getting in, stealing, and getting out themselves. You know, anything else that happened, who cares? But, and they probably wouldn't have cared if 50,000 peacekeepers died necessarily, but there's kids that had nothing to do with anything on there. So, you know, you can't, you know, you have to have some morals and sympathy and whatever, you know.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I didn't realize until that they said that this the peacekeepers were taking the Enterprise approach to bringing families with you, right? I mean, 50,000 people, including kids, means obviously they've got some kind of family or whatever passes for that amongst the peacekeepers. So,
yeah, because you would think that they would just, and I'm sure they do elsewhere. It's just, you know, on planets, they have, you know, training places and, you know, where they live and all kind of stuff. But to have this giant metro or, in this case, mile long ship, yeah, I mean, I guess it's like their training center plus the carrier, all that stuff, and however many command carriers they have like that too. So yeah, it's like, and you know, who's going to really attack a command carrier, right? It'd be crazy to suicide attack one something like this big. So it's probably a safe place to do this kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Nothing could happen.
Yeah. Except when a suicidal maniac blows up a Leviathan inside your ship, and then, you know, but, yeah. What's the odds of that happening, right? Yeah. And we see John's unlocking more and more of the wormhole knowledge buried in his subconscious, or at least this John. You know, he didn't have it gifted to him like the other John. And it's kind of funny that he's writing it on his hands and arms. I thought it was kind of funny. why not just use paper or write it down on a computer or something? But I mean, I guess I can kind of headcanon it away, I guess, by saying otherwise, if he lost that paper, then maybe he won't remember the equations again to write them down. I don't know.
Well, it gives you a way to keep it on you at all times, right? I mean, you got to keep it within hand's reach.
So is he like ambidextrous? Like when he runs out of like room on his left arm and hand, could he like put the pen in his right in his left hand and write on his right hand? Like
he seemed to be. I mean, he had writing on both arms. So.
Yeah. So maybe your subconscious lets you write on both arms without, you know, because they're all just weird symbols anyway. It's not like it's like our kind of math equations. It's weird symbols and letters, right? So, you know, I guess either hand can write that kind of stuff. I don't know. And we had a nice fake out, which we talked about earlier, where Kreis tells Scorpius their cunning plan to blow up the carrier. And I mean, I was kind of going back and forth. I was pretty sure he wasn't selling them out and it was somehow part of the plan. But then in the back of your head, you're like, maybe it's not. Because remember, this is Kreis we're talking about. So maybe being back on his former ship with his former colleagues and lovers, or lover or whatever, maybe that got to him and he wanted to get back in their good graces. And so he turned him in. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a side of my distrust of Kreis that I fell for it, right? I mean, especially when I was looking for the title, right? You know, we kind of go into these looking at playing the game of, you know, where's the title fit in and all that kind of stuff. And wolf in sheep's clothing, I was thinking, oh, we're going to have a betrayal from Kreis and he was, you know, looking for an opportunity all along, or, you know, how does he get out of here and have talent and get his life back? I mean, there's all kind of things he could have been trying to figure out there, but he turned out that was legit. So I was wrong.
Yeah, but no, that does fit with the title. That was, I didn't pick up on that. Yeah, good point. And then we get, you know, got to go back to our on-location shooting here. We've got the nice scene in the planetary training room with Aaron, that little girl, and later Henta. So you can really see how far Aaron's come with becoming a more of a well-rounded, sympathetic person, breaking away from that peacekeeper mentality and upbringing and we don't call it brainwashing, whatever you want to call it, but that mentality of strength, don't show any weakness, and, you know, get the job done. So that, yeah, it's kind of made her a better, stronger overall person than if she stayed being a peacekeeper. So that was nice.
And I'm sure that Henta will come around by the end of the episode and, you know, see the error of her ways and not die a fiery death of any kind at all. You know, sure.
Yeah, you know, she'll take a prowler, she'll come on board Moya, they'll have another peacekeeper on board, you know.
Well, they've got to replace one, so.
Yeah.
They're one down.
Yeah. So, yeah, now we're just losing cast members now. You got the Stark off the credits. Well, he's still in the credits, but he's not on the show anymore. No. But I guess next time we'll have everybody in the credits still, even though they won't be half of them on the show.
That's a good way to get a check.
Yeah. Get paid for the whole season, be there once. Yeah. And going further along with that theme of is he a double-crossing traitor or not, we have Scorpius telling John his plans failed, and look, here's the guy right here. And, you know, John jumps after Kreis, you know, pretty convincingly, because I think at that point he didn't really know what was going on.
Well, so, it's the whole, you know, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Yeah. Thing, right? Yeah. So, you know, that further sells the plan, so Scorpius believes what's going on. And we didn't really know it, you know, until like for sure the next scene in the generator room where Kreis explains the whole plan. It's like, yeah, it's a nice plan, John, but I just can't flip the self-destruct switch, you know. So, but that was good, you know, that John was, you know, had legitimate reactions to that. So it wasn't staged or fake. So probably, you know, that wouldn't leave Scorpius with any doubts what's going on. You know, plus Scorpius can tell lies and that kind of stuff, although Harvey's shielding John from that, but maybe from the other people, if they would have known that, you know, that John was in on it, you know, he might have picked up on it. And what's Kreis' cunning plan? Blow Talon, well, actually Starburst Talon inside the command carrier, blowing them up and the carrier slowly to implode, which is nice, as opposed to blowing up immediately, because then everybody would be dead and that'd be in the show. So, and I do vaguely remember that Talon was destroyed at some point. It wasn't in season 4, since I'd seen this before. I just can't remember half of it. I just didn't remember that Kreis died as well. So it was kind of, you know, ooh.
Yeah, and not knowing that, you know, I was figuring that, yeah, I knew they'd have to kind of do something with them. I couldn't see them sticking around for another season like the way they were. But I was kind of figuring that Talon and Kreis would escape together and we'd catch up them when they were, or not, you know, depending. But you'd know they were out there. They could always come back, which I guess technically they could, because there's always a chance the Starburst actually took them somewhere, right? But probably not.
Yeah, I mean, it's sci-fi, so, you know, you can tech your way out of anything, right? So,
see, if that had been today, you'd have a spinoff show where it's the adventures of Talon and Krace out there doing something crazy in the unknown charted regions. So,
yeah, like maybe as they starburst, they somehow got into like a time warp and got sucked out of time. And you know, oh wait, that's Loki. Never mind, it's different.
Oh, but you could do a quantum leap.
Yeah, he could like go back.
They jump into other Goliathans along the way.
Yeah, there we go. Quantum Farscape.
Far leap.
Yeah. Leapscape? No, it doesn't make sense. Quantumscape. There we go. Yeah, so then, you know, Krace needs this big distraction, so John's got just the thing. So he goes to Moya, gets his module, and cons Scorpion to, you know, going on a trip. But before that, though, we get the kind of a really nice, touching scene with Crichton telling Pilot and Moya what's going on, and Moya surprisingly understands, and is not as upset as you might think. So that was nice. And then, you know, they have the, you know, I love you, and, you know.
So. And it's one of the better Pilot scenes. I've been kind of feeling like Pilot's been getting the short shift lately. You know, there's not been a whole lot going on between him and Moya and the crew. And it's been kind of a little more conflict there than you've seen in past between the Pilot, right? Pilot's usually the more easygoing one, you know, and there seems to be a lot more drama and less. So this scene really, you know, was touching between the two of them, and, you know, Moya sends her love too, and all that kind of stuff. And that just makes the, when we get to the very end, even worse, right? Because then it kind of feels darker because you just had that light. So.
Yeah. And plus, I guess with that, what they're going to do to Talon, they're going to basically wipe his personality anyway and put like a new one in effectively. So, I mean, I guess in Moya's mind, she's going to grieve either way. You know, so I guess this is a better way to go than the other way. I don't know.
Yeah, she was probably already grieving it, you know, anyway for that mm-hmm. process.
And then, yeah, we get the another cool scene with John and Scorpio going through the wormhole, and Scorpio's reaction to just being there. He's just like, you know, I can't describe this. This is amazing. And I guess John's theory about his little pod surviving wormholes seems good because they don't liquefy. So, you know, bonus. So.
Yeah, that would be another quick way to end it.
Yeah. Oh, well, oops. Although I'm kind of wondering, maybe like the little extra drama that they had inside the wormhole where, you know, they were, you know, got caught in that distortion or whatever, and they're kind of getting jostled around, and, you know, everyone is like riveted to the comms on the command carrier because they're listening in to the whole thing. So I wonder if that was part of the distraction to get everybody, you know, oh, what's going to happen? You know, so everybody's glued to the monitors and the comm system because, you know, they're all been dying to know and see more about wormholes since that's what they've been doing for how many years now. And, you know, it's right there. It's like, oh no, what's going to happen? So, you know, good distraction if that was what they tried to do.
that was my read. You know, he made sure to have the disturbance to keep the crew listening, you know, because they knew they were all going to be paying attention, like you said. So it kept their attention fixated on them. I mean, you know, there's nothing like dramatic scenes like that to, you know, take an audience and draw them into, like, say, an episodic series or something, you know.
Yep, reel them in. Yep, keep them there. Which gives Krace time to get on to Talon. And then as they arrive back at the ship, Krace gets to give his final soliloquy, telling Scorpius off. He stole his life, and now he's going to return the favor. And then you see, like, you know, Scorpius realizing too late, oh, crap. And then Talon starbursts, and they're gone. And then soon, everybody else will be too.
Yeah, that was pretty much like the nail, right? Because once that starburst hit, everything was irreversible. So that was kind of an interesting way to do it, where it's like, no matter what, Scorpius doesn't have an out.
Yeah, because whatever got left behind when it blew up, like, I don't know, some kind of gravitational thing or something that, but, you know, caused the carriage to start imploding on itself, you know? So it's like, yeah, at that point, it's like, oh, well, we're done.
Yeah. Usually it's scrambling to try to stop it or something. It's like, no, that okay, good move. You win. Like, that. We just got to deal with it now.
Yeah, you can't, like, you know, eject part of the ship because that's probably, like, the heart of the ship and whatever. So it's like, yeah, there's no way. It's like, everybody knows we're done. It's over. And then, yeah, we get those great hectic scenes of just people running everywhere trying to get off the carrier. You know, you got escape pods, you got, you know, prowlers and other ships as they cut to space, like just fleeing, you know, fast as they can. You know, even before they got the emergency evac, it's like, yeah, we're out of here.
Yeah.
And also we get that amazing, I was just riveted, the amazing scene of that water, I guess probably from that lake in the planetary room, gushing into the room that Scorpio's in, like down the stairs, and he's just standing there and trying to walk up the stairs when it's coming down. I mean, that was amazing. I mean, and it's all practical stuff. I mean, I was thinking, you know, this has to be only one take because how are you going to get thousands of gallons of water reset to do this? And they did it all in one take. I mean, that was amazing. It was well done.
True. Like you say, we've become so inured with digital effects, right? I almost didn't even think about it being practical. You know, we just think, oh, you know, big movie scene, even our TV show, you know, episodes now. I mean, you know, crazy space and scenes like this, and it would be nothing for them to do this with the computer effects. But in this day, that was a major, like you say, one and done. Here's your shot, practical effects scene, and that's amazing. I actually expected Scorpius almost to just, like, you know, take a seat and that'd be the way he went out, you know, going down with the ship. I almost would have not been surprised if that was where the last we saw of him, but obviously not, as we'll get to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like the whole logistics of that scene. It's like, okay, we got this giant water tank behind here, and okay, Wayne, you're going to, you only got one shot at this, so it's going to come flooding down them stairs. Don't fall down. Wait for you. Don't fall down.
Or if you do fall down with, you know, authority or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Fall like Scorpius would fall down on his butt. Yeah, that's sneer and fall down. Yeah. And then, yeah, we get the, you know, Strappa realizing that, you know, now that things are falling apart, or the fact that this is all over now, maybe this is his big chance to get away from Scorpius. And by the way, I got all this stuff in my head, and I guess somehow either John or him or whoever figures out, well, there's a Rorschach nearby, so hey, let me just go wipe your memories real quick, and you can go about your business. Which, that's, you know, shout out to the Aurora Chair way back. Ooh, how long ago was that? Is that season one? I think, yeah, it was season one, I think.
Yeah, because it was Crace who put him in it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when we first meet Scorpius, then later too. But yeah, they only have like less than half an arm, they said, before the carrier implodes, which I'm guessing it's imploding not all at once, but in pieces. So, like, how long would it take to wipe out their memory? But yeah, okay, I'll allow it. It's cool.
I really thought that Strappa was going to choose to die on the ship, right? I mean, when he says, oh, you know, there's one other and, you know, we know what has to be done. It was like, no, he's done. He's just, you know, that's going to be the death of him. And it's like, no. Hey, remember that chair? That's definitely a better way to go than, you know, sacrificial death. So.
Yeah, it's probably he doesn't have the resources or money to, like, or the wherewithal to disappear or to escape like Moira's crew has. So if he goes back to wherever, they're going to find him, grab him, and it's like, aren't you the guy that knows all about this wormhole stuff? So, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think him running away with John in the module was going to work. So, yeah.
Yeah. Although, hey, he can go on Moira and they can work on wormholes together nicely, but yeah, probably not. And then, yeah, Erin has her final run-in with Henta, who still just doesn't get it. And before she can shoot Erin, she gets nice and crispy from a fireball and dies horribly, which was great makeup. I mean, there's wonderful effects, although I don't know we really needed that close-up of her, though.
Yeah, that little too close. It made me curious about the girl, though. I'm guessing she's with all the other kids and not... I guess I thought maybe that was Henta's daughter. Maybe, I don't know. I read too much into that one, and then the more I think about it, maybe I just kind of got... I was like, oh, no, you know, what are they going to do with that girl now that, you know, she's a fireball, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah, they only tell you about how many people did get off, how many didn't, which I guess, how would you know? I mean, but so, you know,
obviously some didn't. So,
yeah, because Henta's all annoyed about that. But yeah, but I guess you have to, you know, be hopeful that all the kids got off. So, because that was the whole point of this. And then we get our little final question mark scene with Scorpius and John, where they run into each other at the hangar. And Scorpius seems rather calm, given everything's falling apart around him and all his plans he's worked for the last several years are done. Or are they? You know, they give each other the code, unlock their bracelets, and they go their own way. Just John wanders off, and Scorpius kind of just stays there to go down the ship, maybe. Or maybe not. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he shows back up. I wasn't sure if that was going to be it for... I'm going to say Scorpius Prime, and, you know, we just have Harvey staying around so the actor can keep doing, but I don't know. Speaking of Harvey, I love the Go Fish game. That was one of my favorite scenes from this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually thought about opening up with a Go Fish reference, but I was like, yeah, that'd be tough to get. So yeah. You probably didn't have any of those with you.
No. Yeah. In the middle of those fake World War II theme going on in his head, explosions and stuff, they're playing a card game. It's great.
And yeah, not just like poker or anything. It's Go Fish.
So. Yeah. A game no respectable soldier would play, right? So. But yeah, you kind of figure Scorpius has to kind of hang around to maybe clash with Graza next season or something, or have her come back and be like, you know, you caused this, that, whatever, something, you know, so you have some more drama, peacekeeper drama next year.
See, I have no clue what happens in the next season, so it could be a totally new villain and I wouldn't know it. So yeah, sure.
Why not? Whatever, yeah. And then our final scene of the episode on Moya, where everybody's talking about leaving. I guess because they think because Scorpius and the command carrier are done and then destroyed that they're not going to be hunted any longer? I wasn't quite following what they're thinking there. You know, he didn't really pardon them. It was just amnesty while they were on board the ship. And Peacekeeper High Command certainly didn't pardon them because they captured them again when they left and they probably Razor brought them back. So that didn't make any sense. And plus, now that they've destroyed an entire command carrier, and they have that on their records, I don't think they're going to get anywhere that they want to get to. But I guess we'll see how that goes next episode and maybe next season. I don't know.
Well, does the level of property damage increase the amount of money on your wanted poster? I mean, is that like, you know, the big wanted dead or alive posters that are posted in like all the mail post offices and stuff around the territories? I think the benefit is, though, that they destroyed the carrier so fast that there's probably not been time for that to be communicated that they were the ones responsible, right? I mean, it could have just been a wormhole test accident.
Yeah, I guess if people, you know, the people that did escape would probably say that it was Krace that blew up the ship. So, okay, you know, but yeah, I was like, you know, there's like theft and grand theft, which is like, you know, ways of stealing things. But is there property damage like levels? If so, yeah, this is off the scale.
Yeah, one metra, mile, whatever it is, worth of, you know, Peacekeeper property. Yeah, that's probably pretty serious.
Yeah.
I mean, the number of prowlers that were in there, well, at least before they all left, you know. So.
Although for street cred, that jacks their level of badassness to like a whole other level.
Oh, yeah. They're going to be like the baddest dudes in the Uncharted territories for sure. I'm with you on the, you know, not quite sure the tone shift. I kind of mentioned that I thought this ended on one of the more somber notes. And I think part of it was because you've got a little bit of mourning for Krace, but you've got everybody talking about leaving all of a sudden. And it's like, oh, not like we're happy we pulled off a job or, you know, everybody doing a toast to Krace in the you know, around the table or something. No, we're all like planning where we're going to go next and sad and mournful about it. And I was like, that's out of nowhere.
Yeah, because they're still wanted, even though, you know, Dargo's got his info on the guy that killed his wife, and Rigel's got his information about, you know, Hynerian political stuff, but it's like, he's not going to go back and become Dominar again, because it's like, oh yeah, aren't you that escape criminal? So, I'm not quite sure what they're thinking, but, you know, maybe they're just all happy, wonderful, that they think everything's over, when really, they haven't thought it through yet, you know, but
I guess we'll
a whole episode to find out, yeah. And speaking of which, next time on the Farscape portion of our podcast, we'll be discussing the hopefully exciting, pulse-pounding Season 3 finale, Episode 22, Dog with Two Bones, which sounds like a more happy title than what we've had before. But I guess playing our usual guessing game of what's that mean? And again, not a clue. I mean, it's the season finale, right? So given the time period of this show and even today's season finales, that's just some kind of cliffhanger to get you to come back for next season. So, I mean, it sounds like a good thing from the title. Like a dog with two bones is probably happy it's got two, not one, right? But I figured maybe that's some kind of phrase or something I wasn't familiar with, so I looked it up. And it's a Roman poem version based off a Greek poem about a dog that has two bones and can't decide which one to eat, so it starves to death. So, hey, uplifting. Another uplifting. And it's also an Aesop fable about a dog carrying a bone and sees his reflection in the water and thinks the dog's like coming after his bone. So he growls at it, but he drops his bone in the water and loses it. And that's more of a story about being grateful for what you have and not being greedy. So I guess who's the greediest person we can think of on Moya? Rigel. But that's kind of a way to end a season. So maybe it's more of an ensemble story about the crew not being greedy. Or maybe being happy with what they have and where they are, because they're still alive, they're on Moya, you know, they're all still a family. Hopefully they realize they can't all just leave and go home because they're still wanted here, and this is not going to really work out for them. So, I don't know, we'll see. That's all I got.
That kind of signs up to my take, right? Because I think it comes down to, you know, what you treasure. You know, which treasures do you want? And I put air quotes around treasure, right? Because do they want their individual desires? You know, the Dominar, the revenge on the guy who murdered your wife, you know, all the kind of stuff that they started out being after? Or is it about moving past that and staying together as a family because you've found this family, right? That what do you treasure? kind of goes back to that you know, dog reflection parable. I think that's what I picture is, you know, do you drop what you have to chase something you don't have? And what does that cost you?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that sounds good.
Moralistic if, you know, completely inaccurate. So we'll find out.
Yeah. Or it could be they find a dog that has two bones. No.
Oh, dang. Literal. Who'd have thought?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big Jim Henson show. They probably got, you know, a dog Muppet they can bring. No, never mind.
Oh, now I want a Cerebus Muppet. That's what I want.
So we had a dog with six bones then? Is that how that worked?
Ooh.
Hmm. Yeah. Three heads. Math.
Math. I was told there'd be no math. Yeah.
Shout out to 1970s Saturday Night Live, everybody. But we will find out. And also, as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, next time we will definitely for sure be doing more than just one episode of Farscape. We'll be discussing the final season, as much as we can anyway, of Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3, the final season. Because the first three episodes dropped a couple days ago as we record this. And by the time we get to recording the next one, at least one or two more will be out by then. So look for that, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 episodes of that, in addition to our usual Farscape stuff next time, and our Season 3 recap of Farscape. If you haven't seen that before or heard that before, it's kind of where we just kind of sum up the good and bad episodes of the season. We don't really go into like a season-long arc of describing everything that happened, because then that would be a whole episode by itself. So just our kind of like hits and misses of Season 3.
Yeah, and based on how the last season of The Bad Batch ended, it'll definitely be, you know, uplifting and, you know, you know, definitely more positive than we were at the end of this episode, I'm sure. It's all positivity, all uplifting. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, this would be end of all the clone stuff. And of course, as we saw in the first couple of Star Wars films, you know, the clones were just all over episodes 4 through 9. So, oh, wait a minute. Yeah, so.
Episode 4, you mean Star Wars?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I can go off on a tangent now, but I'm not going to. Okay. So. Maybe we'll save that for next time. So that is your homework for next time, and we'll see you then. Goodbye.
Bye.